Hey everyone, welcome to My Uppie Movies. This week we are actually doing a Valentine's Day movie on Valentine's Day. Though I don't know if anyone else would call this a Valentine's movie, but there you go. Released on Valentine's Day, Daredevil, starring Ben Affleck, is really something. Also, we welcome our buddy, Dan Schumacher, from the Scuttlebutt Podcast, which is a Marvel podcast, and he has become our Marvel guy, so... Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us, Dan. And of course, thanks for subscribing. Thanks for following us. Join the Patreon if you want extra episodes. And thanks for all you do, guys.
Happy Valentine's Day from Myopia Movies. This week, we're watching the romanticest, most, like, dude, they are on fire, this movie. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck in Daredevil. 2003, I didn't even look. It's 2003, 2004, something like that. And remember, because of this, Ben Affleck promised to never be a superhero again. I'm host Nick Hoffman and riffer on Cineprov, and on panel we've got Evan.
I'm a panelist on this and riffer on Cineprov. I've got a Twitch stream that you can find at Twitch Evan Brando Show, whatever. I do a bunch of stuff. I'm happy to be back on Myopia talking about Daredevil.
Daredevil. Daredevil. Mr. Sudsy.
Hello, this is Daniel, frequent annoyance of Nick on Myopia, contributor to popdose.com, and a guy who once hired a lawyer in a wheelchair.
Yeah, so this is Kevin Feige is a producer, but this is before the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is one of the few properties that they kind of had that they gave it a shot with, right? Because they didn't own X-Men at the time. They didn't own Spider-Man at the time. They didn't own Fantastic Four. And that's why there's been so many good Fantastic Four movies. They didn't even let that Miles Teller one simmer before they released a new one.
No, they knew what they were releasing. That movie is probably the worst POS I've ever seen.
It's atrocious. It's like, they're all bad, but at least the Roger Corman one is fun.
Yeah, oh, true, true. Honestly, I think the new one's worse than the Roger Corman one.
It is. It 100% is. Even the one with Captain America as the Human Torch is both of those are unwatchable.
Those are fine, right? Those are, like, not amazing, but they're fine. They're fine. They're better than the worst of the MCU, you know? Like I think they're better than Iron Man 2, but that's a
we'll
pretty
toss
low
it
bar.
On the table. Are you going to watch the second Thor movie or are you going to watch Fantastic Four?
Fantastic Four, no questions asked. Not even. There it is.
Every day of the Ding Dong Week. It's also half an hour shorter because, like, that movie, my God, help me. God in heaven, that movie is like 2 hours and 15, and I'm just like, it doesn't need to be.
It's not a tight 215, that's for sure.
I know we're wildly off topic, but does anybody else remember the Fantastic Four cartoon?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, not bad.
Are you the Marvel guy?
So the point of today was to talk about Daredevil.
Why don't we get into
we're done. We're
this
done.
Is the director's cut version. It's much
that's
better
right.
We don't talk about Daredevil at all.
Where Coolio gets off for murder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say.
It's been canceled due to lack of interest.
Oh God, help me! That'd be so
well,
much fun.
All right, Dan, all right.
And we should get into what actually happens in this movie, which came out, I think, a year after Spider-Man did with Tobey Maguire. So everyone's like, "Oh, Marvel! We can green light a Marvel movie, and then that's going to get us a whole bunch of money."
The history is interesting too, because like superhero movies, correct me if I'm wrong, not being super mass-produced at this point.
Well, you have to remember
this
is the first wave of this.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So, like, now we have far too many, and I will see them all, but of course. But
well, and credit where credit's due, right? We have Batman in 89 and 92, and then a little bit of a lull because Spider-Man fell apart. We get X-Men, 2000, supposed to be 2001, then becomes 2002, is Spider-Man. Sony properties, if I recall. Fox and Sony, right? And then Marvel didn't own any of that shit anymore. So Daredevil was their first attempt to make a Marvel movie. Kevin Feige's there, like, right?
Well, Marvel
was a grab for a bunch of the IPs, right? Like, that was like, cause, the most famous example is probably the Watchmen thing and how the rights of that got, like, shifted around like crazy, right?
Right.
But like that was a lot of these properties back then. Like we're just getting kind of like trading hands, like doing nothing.
In the mid-90s, Marvel very nearly went bankrupt, and I think Ron Perlman, not the Ron Perlman who was Hellboy, but the CEO of Marvel at the time, sold a bunch of movie rights to Fox and Sony, and so everything was fractured for a while, and that basically saved the company. So that's why X-Men existed, first as an animated show on Fox Kids, and then as a movie, and then that's how Spider-Man existed at Sony.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Spider-Man 2 is a masterpiece.
Credit where credit's due, though, because people forget this one, but the Blade trilogy was huge.
That's true. That's
it was
really true.
And that, it's, I mean,
some other effort. I just want to ice skate uphill.
That's right.
And also, that's why Ang Lee's Hulk exists.
Oh, that one. When we come back for like summer blockbustery kind of stuff, we'll do 2003's Hulk because
These are fascinating movies. Here's why. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, Sudsy. But because they are kind of new in like the superhero movies, right? Other than like we've had Batman movies, we've had Superman movies, but we don't really know what a serious superhero movie looks like. So these are just people kind of just trying stuff. Like now there's a formula, right? And like all of them kind of follow the formula. And this feels more like an ode to like 2003 than it does a superhero movie. This feels like it takes more from The Matrix.
There is so much nu metal in this movie.
Right, absolutely. Amy Lee is on songs.
Evanescence songs that premiered in this thing.
Exactly.
Oh, there are not just one Evanescence songs. There are two Evanescence songs. This is such a great idea of a movie, but the execution is so piss poor. And I remember for one, when Ben Affleck used to be a joke, everyone hated him.
Everyone loves Ben Affleck now.
Right, exactly. But back in the early 2000s, everyone thought he was like the worst actor ever. Same with Keanu, frankly. They're beloved now, but oh my God, the fact that he used to star in movies was just, people got angry over that.
Evan, why don't you give us our plot synopsis?
Okay, so Daredevil is a motion picture that starts in media res, which is actually, in my opinion, one of the coolest openings of a movie ever. I love it. I really, unironically, love this part of the movie for about 30 seconds. Because he's on the steps or whatever, he's bleeding out, it's awesome. But I don't know if that's in the director's cut, which is...
Hold on, are we going to skip over the CGI rat?
Oh, the CGI rat.
Are we also going to skip over the Braille in the opening credits?
Oh
yeah.
Is that offensive? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. The movie's about a blind character, right?
Right. I don't know.
It's not just random. If it was random Braille, I would think so. But I don't think it's random. It's their names. Yeah.
It's not for me to say either way. It feels
fair. Yeah, that's,
I guess, is the thing there. Maybe it's cool. I don't know.
It was neat. It's fine. It's weird because you can't feel Braille when it's on a screen.
Either way, so we've
Daredevil might be able to.
So we've got Daredevil breathing out on the church steps.
Yeah.
And then we go see his origin story. I think we jump right back. We jump to his origin story where little baby Matty Murdock. He's blinded by a toxic waste thing that gets splashed into his eyes.
He's bitten by a radioactive blind man.
Yeah, he's but it enhanced him, his other senses. So now he can see with his ears. Like a bat. Or
he's like some sort of bat man.
He's a man, perhaps. He's like a bat. It's bat.
That's what happens in the movie. That's not how the comics work, but we'll get to that later.
Also, it's the same chemicals that mutated the Ninja Turtles. That's not a joke.
Canon, actually. Yes, you're right.
Is that really?
Yes, that's right.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's that. Meanwhile, his Papa Murdock, he's a boxer, and he's a good guy. He refuses to take a fall in a fixed fight, or he refuses to win a fixed fight, or something. Either way, something happens, and his dad is killed by a mobster, and Matt is like, oh, I'm gonna be a good guy now. I'm gonna clean up the streets. And then we flash forward again, and Jon Favreau is there.
As Foggy Nelson.
as Foggy Nelson, which is great casting as far as I'm concerned. It's the same character as Happy in the MCU. And I would bring him back for it in a second. But he's a lawyer now in Hell's Kitchen. And then he meets Elektra?
Well, he does murder a rapist.
Yeah. Well, we see him do some Daredevil stuff.
Yeah, he does straight up murder that dude.
Yeah.
All right, that's...
This is not like Batman where he's like, I don't have to help you. No, he just straight murders a dude.
That was for funsies.
Bullshit, that's Daredevil stuff, because he's not a sadist who, like, kills people for pleasure like he does in this movie.
Didn't like, Frank Miller's run on it, though, kind of turn him into that?
He's super violent, for sure. And I think I think it's not that he himself is, like, without morals. It's just that it is a very graphic thing. Like, Frank Miller makes things and stylizes them towards ultraviolence.
Right, like that's why like his Batman is now like what everyone considers to be Batman,
right,
and all that type of bullshit.
Right.
It's like, yeah, we're just beating the ever loving fuck out of these people, and like not caring like how many bodies are just sitting behind us. Like as long as you know good is in front of us, that's fine.
I don't necessarily disagree with you, Dan. I just think this movie turns Daredevil into kind of a sadist, and that's not what he's supposed to be like. Like in the comics, even the Frank Miller comics, he'll like deflect a bullet back to a villain, and the bullet will like shoot the guy through the head.
Let's be
but
clear here.
That's not like Daredevil taking any pleasure out of it.
Absolutely. No, Nick is totally right. They're trying to make Batman the Matrix. That is absolutely what this movie is attempting to do. And in that, it becomes just a love note to 2003. That's all it is.
Yeah.
You get the Evanescence songs. It's gritty.
That's such a great way to put it.
And edgy. They got the tight sunglasses and the leather that's, you know, it's very, very like they're trying to do Batman the Matrix.
I had to go and like after I watched it, I had to go and check when Underworld was made because this movie just straight up looks like goddamn Underworld.
Yeah.
It does. Everything is like, at least, oh man, I have feelings on this actually because like so in the theatrical everything is like that where like inside it has to be like green and it looks all weird and distorted because of neon lights, and then outside where like at night it's just black and blue and it's ridiculous. But then like when you watch the director's cut, there are some legitimate like daytime scenes where it's not like that, and it's like God, those should have been in that theatrical release because it livens up the movie so much.
I want to go ahead and ask, who saw this in theaters back in 2003?
Nope.
I was 10. So
I was also 10, yeah. So
yeah.
I feel ya.
Oh, boy.
No, I graduated from college or high school that year, and I definitely did not see it.
Well, you were missing out there, Mr. Nicholas. But anyway.
I'm sure.
Anyway, this is one of those things like post-Spider-Man, which came out, I think, the year before. That was like a record breaker back in the day, which the original Spider-Man in 2002 with Tobey Maguire is still a great movie. So for a couple years, they tried to just emulate what those movies were, and none of them got it right. And this is a good example of that, because everyone's right. There are so many shots and scenes that rip off The Matrix and oof.
And again, the problem is that there's like six movies in here. They introduce three of the most important Daredevil villains.
Yep.
I mean, and Elektra's kind of, I mean, again, this is a Batman movie, so she's kind of Catwoman, where they're on and off.
That's absolutely what she is.
Now, but there's also Bullseye, and there's also the Kingpin, all of which who die in this and then undie, which I guess we'll get to.
Well, actually, speaking of that, in the plot, after we meet Elektra, she's the daughter of someone who is dealing with Kingpin.
Yeah,
right? That's she's tied to Kingpin. Well, and it's also the same guy who employed Daredevil's dad.
We've mentioned Frank Miller a couple times because he basically built up who Daredevil was. And the whole stereotype around him is, oh, he's writing for a woman. That means she's a hooker. But he created Elektra, so that's been my one go-to point whenever anybody brings up that point.
That's fair. Evan, just back to what you're saying.
I think I got something wrong.
Yeah, no. So she's the daughter of, oh my god, now I'm
Nachos.
Nachos, Mr. Nachos there. awful name. Sorry.
She's not the daughter of Kingpin.
Fallon is the guy who hires Kingpin to kill.
Elektra's supposed to be part of the Hand, which is this ninja cult, and they never even reference the Hand in this movie, do they?
I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
This movie does not need more.
One day we'll do the Elektra movie, and then we can also not care about the Hand, because I don't think it's in there either.
I never saw that.
I've heard don't.
Where do you think the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles got their adversaries from? The Foot Clan? I mean, that's supposed to be the opposite of the Hand.
True.
Wait, the opposite of hands or feet?
Yeah, scientifically speaking.
That is science, mm-hmm. and I love it.
Some hard science there.
I'm glad that we educate people on this show sometimes.
Serve the public.
So some stuff happens. The Mr. Nachos tries to break stuff off with Kingpin. Kingpin hires Colin Farrell.
Stop. We have to talk about how we're introduced to Colin Farrell. He is in an Irish pub winning at darts, and then he murders a man with a paperclip to his like waddler, to the gobbler.
Colin Farrell is like
eight.
He doesn't just murder a man with a paperclip, he murders a man with several paperclips.
And a peanut later on.
He killed an old lady.
That's the best scene in the movie.
We're going to have to talk about racist lady being killed with peanut for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so
there's a little cream in his coffee. Mommy!
What an awful line!
The worst...
He got her bank card for being racist. Congratulations, Danny.
The worst part about this movie is a Colin Farrell line. It's when Colin Farrell goes, I need a costume. And then they don't give him one. Why would they not give him one?
Bullseye has a costume.
And he is taking his already Irish accent and turning it up to 12. He's like, I need to costume.
Which also is just fucking ridiculous because if I have read correctly, this is like one of the first movies he ever like actually like did his actual accent for, his Irish accent. Like he was mostly doing his American accent for stuff. And the character he's playing is not Irish. Like not at all.
No.
And they're just like, yeah, just fucking go with it, man. Like, who cares? Do whatever. And he just turns it up. And I'm like, why? Like, why would you take such a hard left turn here?
And speaking of just fucking going with it, we have two people we have to mention. Yeah. Joey Pants is in this.
Yes.
And Kevin Smith is in this. Why?
Coolio is in the director's cut, people. What? This is why you should watch it.
Yeah. Okay. You have to tell us what happens with Coolio.
Oh my god, there's a whole B plot! There's a whole B plot, dude, that they just cut out. And that's the thing, it like actually legit makes it good because they're trying to frame Coolio for the murder of this prostitute because Frank Miller apparently wrote this again.
Prostitutes.
Yeah.
They're trying to frame him. This cop
murdered him. He's in the pocket of Kingpin, this whole thing. And Matt Murdock takes on the case. Murdock and Nelson take on the case because he can tell that he's innocent. And they introduce like the whole concept of like Daredevil using his powers in his everyday life to do good instead of just beating the shit out of people, which is great. It's so great. And I don't know why they cut that and like not so much of this other just blast stuff. But yeah, you just have these great scenes of like Jon Favreau interviewing interviewing Coolio on the stand, and he's like trying to get him shut up because he's like, "Have you ever owned a handgun?" And he's like, "No, I've never owned a handgun. A shotgun, though." And it's like, "You just blew it, dude."
That sounds great.
Hey, wow, Coolio,
you know what? So riffing.
I want to watch John Favreau and Coolio in an Arrested Development style court case.
Yes.
Yeah, I just with Andre starring John Favreau and Coolio. Like,
that would be the best movie ever made.
Dan, I've heard the director's cut to This Is Amazing. I haven't seen it yet, but we need to go over Joey
Pants. Amazing is hard. You know, let's ease off the gas a bit. But
what we need is that dude from that 70s show to tie it together and make a Phantom edit.
Well, it's better than what was released, but what was released, we get Joey Pants, and let's talk about his introduction, where after the scene where Daredevil throws a rapist in front of a subway, he shows up as a reporter for the New York Post.
Daniel, can I interject real quick?
Yeah.
This rapist is named after one of the artists, and who did that guy piss off? Like, that's awful, you know?
Like, yeah, that's pretty bad.
Like, at least Jack Kirby, they're, like, thrown in as the medical examiner, but this they just named this rapist after the artist. It's like, dude, that sucks. Like, character's the worst.
That would be the worst Stan Lee cameo ever.
Yeah, he's just some old guy that the little kid stops from
Spider-Man
running into
2? Oh, I know.
Wasn't Spider-Man 2, they named the jerk-ass landlord after Steve Ditko? Like,
they did.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's pretty bad.
They did Ditko dirty, man.
They did Ditko dirty.
Well, either way, that scene in the subway where he shows up on the crime scene and is like being basically the Vicky Vale of this movie.
Yeah.
Trying to ask, like, oh my god, was the Daredevil here? And for whatever reason, I still don't understand, Daredevil left DD and lighter fluid unmarked on the ground because apparently he guessed Joey Pants would light a cigarette on it.
Well, I mean, it is Joey Pants. I will say, did you notice the $15 million mistake in this movie?
No.
So if you look at fire in, like, for example, Dan's glasses, the DD would be flipped.
Right.
So they got the CGI wrong, and it apparently cost like $10 million or something crazy like that to do the CGI effect, and they got it wrong.
Did it really cost that much? Oh my god, I don't even want to think what Steppenwolf cost, dude. No, but like, that's insane. They're just misusing CGI all over the place in this movie, though. Like, we already talked about the rat. They're doing this. Like, they have horrible scenes of him, like, flipping all over rooftops that just don't look good.
Well, and I mean, of course, we already introduced the church. It ends in a church fight, and that's 100% CGI. You might as well be playing the old X-Men arcade game. Like,
because
I would. It's
nonsense. I mean, this movie's a lot of things, but a big chunk of it is nonsense. So
a big chunk instead of the entire thing?
Well, I will give this movie one thing, which is Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck have real chemistry.
No, they don't.
And it doesn't hurt that not only
I think there is quite a bit to like about this movie, unfortunately. I don't think I don't think it ultimately ends up being a good movie, but I think there's not nothing to take away from this.
It's not a bad movie. It's not a good movie either.
Yeah, yeah.
Before
it's a perfect movie kind of show we do.
It's just, you know, it's a movie that it's a movie that immediately aged poorly. Like, it came out and was like, wow, this, once we got 6 months out of this, you know. This movie is an example of why we will probably never have the same nostalgia that we have for like the 80s, you know, like that stuff that's popping right now. We'll never do it for the early 2000s because the early 2000s were lame as hell.
Yeah, but like that's part of the nostalgia. It's just like, look how lame I was.
Right, right.
Yeah,
right. But there's nothing to romanticize there, right? We're not going to look back and be like, oh man, remember Viva La Bam?
Are you?
Dude, I remember I had some pretty sweet Hawaiian shirts with flames on them back then. So.
Evan, are you kidding me?
I was rocking those.
This nu metal soundtrack is one of the greatest soundtracks.
I was trying so hard to think about how I was going to talk about the soundtrack
today. Oh my god.
And I was just like, I don't even know. Because it's like, it's just the most 2003 thing that there is. It's so 2003. It's ridiculous.
I mean, her sci-fi to evanescence is just, it's perfect.
I got to point something out here.
Yeah. What do you point out?
We got two evanescence. They're hitting both of the top evanescence tracks. If you watch the theatrical cut, they occur within 6 minutes of each other. Within Amazing. 6 minutes. At 105 is the first one with the great My Immortal during a funeral scene that none of the audience cares about because we don't care about this character.
Nope.
And then the second is at 111, and I literally wrote down, holy fuck, it's only 6 minutes.
In fact, you could be forgiven for being confused and think it was the same song because these both came out around the same time and they sound identical.
Now, I've got a question for everyone. Immediately after the subway scene, Matt Murdock goes home to his loft house in Hell's Kitchen, which is obviously costing him $10,000 a month in rent.
A minute.
Yeah, there you go. He gets a message from an ex-girlfriend who breaks up with him over the answering machine, which used to be the text message breakup of the day. Was that Joey Lord and Adams from Chasing Amy? It sounded like her.
Was it?
That would be funny.
I could not tell. I could not tell, I guess, with the voice. Because for some reason, I kept being like, is she Irish? Is she not? Because she's like, if you listen to that message, like, there's like a couple of her words that seems like there's a little bit of an Irish accent on them. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, what's going on here? But it's a nothing character. It's just supposed to show you that this dude is hardcore and doesn't need no woman.
In the comics, though, we actually get more of a relationship between Matt and Elektra. The whole thing about them is that they love each other because they're the only equals in the world, or at least amongst them. I mean, she's technically a superhero. He's technically a superhero. So they love each other.
Yeah, and they make it work.
I will say, I because I love you all, I looked up Heather. And there really was a Heather who was a girlfriend of Matt Murdock. Would you like to hear about her?
Oh, absolutely.
Great. Heather, their meet cute was, she met Matt. Heather was the daughter of she was a flighty daughter of a wealthy industrialist and a pretty big contrast to the very somber Matt. In good time, she loosened him up and brought laughter back into his life. But, and this is the big but, because this is our Catholic guilt superhero, Matt failed to prevent her father's supervillain-related suicide. Just as Heather learned that he was Daredevil, then crooked interests began using Glenn Industries as a cover for outmaneuvering an unqualified Heather into her father's position, leaving Daredevil to attack her father's business. Is she alive? No, of course she's dead by hanging herself.
Oh my God.
After Matt fails to take her last phone call, as the alcoholic suicidal cry for help that it was.
Jesus.
Dude, this has to be like right around like late 80s, early 90s that this run was, because like it sounds straight up like that shit.
And I will copy into the chat that we're all in the image of her suicide from Marvel.
Now, awesome. Dan, what? You may know, Green Lantern, there was a whole thing where his sidekick was addicted to drugs in the 70s.
Oh, that I do not know about.
Oh, well, and Iron Man, of course, was an alcoholic in the 90s as well.
Well, they made him Stan Lee specifically made Iron Man to be an unlikable character. Right? Like, that was, he was like, I'm going to make a popular character that just sucks. He was an arms dealer during the Cold War. He beat his wife. He was just generally a POS. And yet, he's the guy that launched 1,000 Marvel movies. So, you know.
Well, I mean, also in Daredevil, one of the big story arcs was that Karen Page, the secretary at his law firm, offered up his secret identity for a heroin hit. So.
Yeah, man, that I was reading into that last night too. That gets crazy, and that's a Kevin Smith run. That's that last line in the movie when he talks about being a guardian devil is the title of this Kevin Smith run. Mm. And of course, it's Kevin Smith that did it. Where he gets this infant child, and this random dude's like, oh yeah, that's the Antichrist. And all of this stuff is going on. Karen Page comes back. She was a porn star. And then now she's not, but she reveals she has AIDS because of her time as a porn star. And like all this stuff goes on, all this crazy stuff. And then like at the end, they're just like, no, that was all a lie.
Also,
all a lie. And I'm like, we're joking about AIDS at this time? Like,
well,
what is happening here?
To make it a little lighter, Kevin Smith is in this movie as a forensics expert. And
that's insane. That's so weird.
Yeah.
And I don't know which came first, his run or this, but it's a pretty good pull if that's what you can do.
His run is before this.
Okay, so that's probably why they asked him to do it. You can almost act. Let's do this.
Isn't Frank Miller in this too as like somebody that Bullseye kills just randomly?
I thought he was one of the dudes who gets his butt kicked. Wasn't he the guy that was battling Jack Murphy was threatening? Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, right.
You guys can check the chat. Well, I put the link to suicide. By the way, it's funny that that's how she dies, because what does he do in this movie other than ignore her phone call? So that could have been the call when she end it all.
My lord.
Let's go back a little bit in this movie and talk about when Matt Murdock meets Elektra in the coffee shop. First, there's that whole scene with Jon Favreau trying to give him mustard for his coffee instead of honey. And then
I laughed.
That was funny.
I'm easy to please.
Yeah, same.
Well, I'll turn.
Well, and it was because he did the wrong cup thing from Princess Bride and switched it.
Inconceivable.
Oh, guys, you can check the chat with the actual Frank Miller cameo. He was the guy outside the bar that Bullseye steals the motorcycle from by throwing something into his forehead.
Yep.
Oh, it's a pen.
That is absolutely
the director's cut.
Well, Dan, why don't you tell us about the Elektra introduction in this movie?
Oh, yeah, when he smells her walking into a coffee shop?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yet.
Awful introduction? Yeah, man, he just, like, stops. He's sitting there talking with Jon Favreau. He's, he's put the mustard in his coffee at this point. And she walks in, and he's just like, tell me. And they do this whole gag about, like, oh, he's gonna, you know, fake out this blind guy who's essentially not blind. I mean, that's really what the gist of this character is, right? Is that all of his other senses make up for his lack of sight. So he theoretically should know immediately what this person looks like. You know, we have this little meet cute where, we have this little meet cute where he's trying to fake that he needs some honey, which is a little bit weird. You know, that's like, I don't know that I would have the confidence to walk up to somebody ever. I guess I'm not Daredevil, of course, but and be like, yo, you got some honey? And like,
I mean, and her line is, what are you, blind?
Yeah.
You know what? I haven't even gotten the blind puns, but like his first line is, you know how they say that your life flashes before your eyes when you die? Well, that's true, even to a blind man. And you're just like, guys, come on.
They cannot let you forget that this character is blind. They just, like, the whole movie hinges on it.
I did like the meet cute, though, in that scene where he shows up and it's like, I'm looking for some honey. I'm sorry. Can you be a little more specific about where it is? That was fine. To me, that was fine.
It's just like, it seems weird, but in theory, I guess, you know, it's totally fine. But yeah, they have this little meet cute. She walks into this coffee shop apparently to read a magazine for 5 minutes and then walk right back out because she just leaves after this. And then he follows her, which is awful. Don't do that.
No.
Don't ever do that. Never. Somebody blows you off and it's like, yo, I didn't give you my name. I don't want you to. That means they don't want you to follow them. They especially don't want when you meet them again and try to get their name again, they don't want you to grab their hand. No one wants that. Like, this is awful. He's very creepy towards her in this movie.
And this leads up. He's
leaning in for long smells and stuff. Like, yeah.
And this leads up to the worst scene in the movie, which is the playground fight.
And it is slow. I don't know what they were thinking, but it is a long going, slow fight. My goodness.
And it's crazy, too, because it's like, there's no real punches really until the end, if I remember right, because they're doing a lot of the dance fighting, but it's way more the dance stuff. It's like, oh, we're both going to balance on seesaws, but neither of us is going to exchange a punch. And then you're going to flip off and I'm going to tell you you're holding back. And it's like, well, what the hell are you doing?
Now, I kind of feel like comic book guy from The Simpsons here and referencing
worst ever.
With technically, when they were introduced in the comics, they danced on the rooftops, and that's how they got to know each other. But this scene was the worst scene ever.
This scene has so much bad about it that it's almost incredible. Like, I don't know how.
Yeah, it almost clicks back to like old games that would, the score would click so high that it clicks back to zero. it's almost in that territory.
It's like getting to level 99 on Pac-Man where the everything just breaks.
Yeah. I mean, I have nothing to add. Like,
you nailed it.
This scene is so cartoonishly absurd. It's almost magnificent. It's the weirdest thing. I'm speechless. What happens is they fight on a seesaw in front of children for 10 minutes. And then apparently that's enough to score with Jennifer Garner. This is presumably where they met, right? Like, I know they ended up like dating and married for a while.
Well, no, Elektra gets killed by Bullseye in the comics, just like in this movie.
Spoilers. No. I mean, Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck in real life.
Yes.
Yeah, they were married, weren't they? Were they not?
Yeah, they were.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. I didn't know they met on this though.
Yeah. I learned that from IMDb trivia.
Oh, well, there you go. Great place.
Hit that up. Gold mine, people. Gold mine.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So, playground fight. Bullseye does kill Mr. Nachos.
Yes.
We're forgetting a big thing right now. Which is the introduction of Kingpin in this movie.
Michael Clark Duncan, man. MTV. All right, baby. God, I think he's incredible. He's really good.
I think he is the best one in this film
Him and Colin Farrell, I think, are like doing a bang up job. And Jon Favreau. This cast is good.
I will disagree with you on Colin Farrell.
Really? I think Colin Farrell nails it. I mean, he's hamming it up, right?
Well, that's I'm not probably as familiar with the character as you are, but it just goes too far for me. And I know
know that this is an iconic, true to life, good portrayal of the character. I just have a really good time with it.
Well,
that's fair.
The best portrayal of Kingpin was in Into the Spider-Verse, and I don't know how you're going to top that. In terms of Bullseye, I mean, this is the only time we've ever seen Bullseye in a movie, so I guess this is our standard.
I will just say I am glad I didn't exist on the internet in the same way, and maybe trolls didn't exist, because I'm sure there's some poor asshole out there who, you know, crapped himself to death because there's a black Kingpin, and I don't care. I could not care less. Duncan is a treasure.
He is so great in this, really, and they asked him to bulk up, which is insane to me also.
Yeah,
they asked him to gain like 30 or 40 pounds, I think, for it, which is a lot if you're that big.
Good lord!
And like, yeah, he got big for it, and like, he's just excellent. Like, he's menacing as soon as you see this dude. He's got an extra scene in the director's cut where he beats the absolute shit out of two of his own bodyguards.
Nice.
Yeah, because when you know, he's like, oh, the word's out on Kingpin. It's not the end. It's not the end, but it's before, when he's like, somebody talked. The Wesley character says somebody talked, and it's like right after that, he's like, yeah, they used to cut out bodyguards' tongues, but I'm gonna just kill these two dudes that are standing right next to me, and just kills them right in front of this guy. It's awesome. Yeah.
Now, funny. That was one thing I was missing from the comics that wasn't in the movie, where he only takes over the crime family because he snaps his boss's neck, and then just he's now Don Corleone, apparently. So it would have been great if they included that scene in the theatrical cut.
Yeah, that's kind of, I know I said earlier that like nothing needs to be added to that movie, but maybe I might walk it back a little bit for some info on that, because he's like, he's the one single guy who runs all of the crime in New York City, but then he's like, yeah, I was working for this other guy at the time, like doing basic hits.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit of like, really? Like, that was in the grand scheme of things, like, that's not that long ago. And then you run all of the crime in New York. You run all of the cops. Like, what is this? You know?
I thought, I thought Kingpin ran all the crime in the world. He was like where the buck stopped when it came to organized crime.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're gonna pick an organized crime guy, he's definitely up there.
I'm just speaking in the realm of the movie. They reference multiple times how, like, you know, the what's his name, Ben Ehrlich, I think is the character's name, Joey Pants.
He's
writing this article about this one single guy who runs all of New York's crime, and so that's where I was referencing with that. But
which is just, it's a lot, especially since this whole movie takes place exclusively in Hell's Kitchen, or as we're corrected,
but now the politicians are trying to call Clinton.
Hell's Kitchen is like 7 blocks, you know? It's a lot. I'm just saying that there's a lot going on there for the fact that it's, you know, it's pretty small.
Yeah.
Well, we get scenes after the Kingpin's introduced where, like I think we said, Bullseye is in an Irish pub winning at darts, and then somebody mocks his Irish accent, so he kills them. And then he's on a plane because he's been hired by the Kingpin, and he kills that woman with a peanut. And then
Daniel, I have another director's cut tidbit for y'all.
Yeah, please.
We get to see Bullseye go through airport security in the director's cut.
No kidding.
I'm not fucking lying to you. He goes up the escalator. He's doing his weird Christ arms thing as he goes up the escalator. It's amazing. They're like, empty your pockets. He's taking out little projectiles. He's got like a paperclip in his mouth and then another paperclip. They somehow did it. Also search for it, but it's just like, this is the most insane scene because he actually, for like what he's wearing, what he looks like, everything, gets through post 9/11 security at an airport super easily. Like,
well, and again, you're talking about a dude with that horrible like nipple tattoo on his forehead.
I'm
just gonna go ahead and ask Dan, why wasn't that in the movie proper? Seriously, that would have been such a great scene.
No, and I think I can understand what they were trying to do. You don't really need it. It's extra, and it's fun to talk about right now because it's like, look how stupid this is. You know,
right.
But like, if this would really drop the movie. Like, it would be even worse if like only that scene or only this scene. The director's cut is actually rated R. It received an R rating. I don't know why.
Sure.
Because like they're not like doing like blood spurts or anything like that. Like it's not overly gory. We're not seeing super crazy things. They're not constantly swearing. They're not, you know, we're not seeing a bunch of sex or anything. There's like three quarters of a woman pulling off her top, and you like never actually see her like actually take off her top. It's just like from the bottom and then the side, and just like, okay, like why is that in here? Because the scene is irrelevant completely.
Oh. So we don't see her taking off the top. Well, then that scene shouldn't have been filmed. I mean, it's worthless. Daredevil was always...
No, I just meant the scene in general was ridiculous, but fair enough.
Daredevil was always an R-rated character, frankly. I mean, he was supposed to be the gritty alternative to Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, and also like kind of Marvel's answer to Batman, I think, in some ways. Or at least some aspects of Batman. Not
for sure.
One.
Yeah, absolutely.
And certainly now he is, right? Like, certainly now.
Yeah.
Him and Iron Man, I guess.
Well, let's skip a little ahead.
In some ways. They're both, right? Okay, so Daredevil is trying to find Bullseye. And then this is just a bloated movie, man. And then they fight.
Well,
Elektra shows up, they fight, and then she beats Ben Affleck. And that's the rooftop fight, right? Or is that the last fight?
No, that's after Nachos is killed. Yeah, she finds him on the rooftop. Yeah,
yeah, which is a great fight. I remember seeing that in the Longhorn for some reason. It was on one of the TVs on the bar. Don't know why. Very vivid. My first exposure to this film.
Hey, Nick, what was the Keanu movie that we saw when we were at the Bookhouse on Ponce? It was
47 Ronin?
Yeah, that was it. I don't know, Evan, apologies. Just you referencing that, it's like, oh yeah, I remember seeing something like that on the in a bar somewhere. But anyway, before that happens, we get to this suave party that Matt Murdock's been invited to because it's supposed to be a party of the wealthy and elite. And he at first doesn't want to go, but then Foggy convinces him to go, and then Elektra's supposed to be there.
No, the way the scenes happen is he doesn't want to go. Foggy's trying to get him there because clients will be there. Then he raw dogs Elektra, which we're introduced to by a vaguely erotic statue in his front room.
Yeah, vaguely.
In a passionate scene that probably took 6 days to film, because there's like angles upon angles, and then she leaves behind on her pillow when she leaves in the morning the invitation again, which is why he goes.
Yeah, and that's after they have their little rooftop scene where he predicts rain, and she's like, it's not going to rain, but if you look as soon as they open the scene up, you can see thunderclouds and lightning in the background. Mm. It's like, this person's really not observant for being an assassin.
Dude, and he also dries her right out by saying, no, the temperature is dropping by 3 degrees and the barometric pressure, and you're just like, dude, you had a good line. Shut up.
That's also a good way to point out one of the big errors in this movie, the whole sonar vision thing. That's not what Daredevil's all about. He doesn't have that power.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
I mean, he doesn't.
A bunch of stuff happens.
To your point, Sudsy, to your point, that is the Matrix nonsense, right?
Oh.
You practically see the numbers falling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This is then when we catch up to the meteores after after that, because then he's on the steps, wounded at the church, right?
Right.
That happens a little later. First at the party, he shows up, he meets Elektra, and there's that whole line about how she wore this dress so that she could look beautiful for him, even though he's blind.
I just watched this movie. I don't know how I'm getting all of this out of place.
Oh, no. Dude, I mean,
it's a mess, though. The movie's a mess. So it's.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched it twice last night, and I couldn't do the synopsis.
I mean, and again, right, to be fair, last night, just behind the curtain, is when we recorded our episode on the King Arthur from 2004 movie.
Oh, great movie.
Anything that happened in it. I was leaning so heavy on Quinn because he did the research, but I'm like, then a bunch of people who were dirty showed up and they fought for 9 hours. Mm. I couldn't tell you a freaking thing about it.
Middle school me loved that movie.
Oh, that's fine.
But, sorry, go ahead.
Either way, during that party, Bullseye kills Elektra's dad after the Kingpin goes and says goodbye, old friend. And there's that whole scene where he's like patting him on the back and saying, basically, I'm going to get you killed. And she's pissed off and wants vengeance because Daredevil didn't save her father. And right. that's where we get the montage that Evan was talking about.
Yeah, she thinks he killed her father because one of his canes is found on the scene. And we haven't really talked about this because this is what Kevin Smith is called in for eventually. Like, but this is where we are. But he has this like blind man's cane, but it like collapses down. And if you twist it one way, it's his bat hook.
Yeah.
Thing that he jumps off and turns into a CGI creation.
So in other words, Nick, it's the thing that Kevin Smith tried to use to destroy the stage and mall rats.
That's right. That's exactly what this is.
So this also has, I'm just going to read it verbatim from my notes. Because Kevin Smith is typing this as the scene opens. I'll drop you like a 3-year-old corpse's testicles is the worst thing I've read in 2020. And it's been a shit year, guys. So
yeah. I've heard COVID death counts, and that's still the worst thing I've heard today.
Yeah, exactly. It's awful. I had to pause it and like see like, well, what's he typing? And then I'm just like, oh, I regret that.
You had to bend over and catch your breath like Dr. Grant in Jurassic Park. You're like, you paused the movie. You had to walk around the couch twice, open another beer. You're like, okay.
Well,
you're right. I have no correction.
No, well, it's awful.
Yeah,
Dan, I think you've just summed up 2020 in a nutshell. There, well done, sir.
That's right.
I hope not, but
yeah. Anyway, so the movie goes on, and then it ends.
Well, there's a funeral.
Yeah, I've been doing this recap. We gotta pump the brakes on this recap.
Well,
we're never gonna finish this
We're missing the two most important things about this movie, Evan.
I mentioned the scene where Bullseye kills a woman with a peanut.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the scene where
that's way back.
I'm talking about the funeral scene where we hear My Immortal, and then immediately after we get a training montage scene with Elektra where it's Bring Me to Life, which this movie is a whole bunch of nu metal.
It's so great. Oh man, it is. Yeah, we're getting two Evanescence songs within 6 minutes of each other.
Someone listening to this is like, "Yeah, man, I used to jam to this soundtrack back in the day."
Oh,
someone.
I jammed to it last weekend. I'm not.
All right, yeah, no, I'm not judging. I'm just saying, like, we'll have more nostalgia for the soundtrack than the actual movie.
Absolutely.
16-year-old Daniel totally had Fallen on CD back in the day.
All right, so since all four of us are here, what's your new metal album of choice? If I had asked you right now, play me new metal. Mine is probably Linkin Park, because in the end was like half of my high school experience.
I think Toxicity.
Toxicity's good.
I think has proven that it stands the test of time. If I had to pick a new metal album.
Oh no. That's what I'm asking. And Toxicity's good.
Chop Suey just does go hard.
Oh yeah.
That's my take, and I'm sticking to it. You can give me.
Have you seen the music video for Chop Suey? The music video for it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's this amazing kid who I always point out to people as the kid who definitely calls his mom Susan. Like, they're just a kid, and he just looks like that type of kid. And, like, maybe it's a dick move on my part, but I just can't help it. Every time I see this, it's just like that is all this kid is excited about is System of a Down, and that's it.
That's fantastic.
I gotta
what
say.
What about you, Doug? Did you have one?
I'm not sure of a specific album. I just think Korn would be an awesome pick for whatever. So
sure.
Whatever album Adidas was on, if you remember that song.
Sure, yeah. I like how no one chose anything classy like the Deftones, because of course they did.
Oh, no.
That's not nu metal, is it?
I mean, it's probably right on the cusp. They're probably like the forebearers of it. But at the same time, like... When I'm thinking of the trash I listened to in high school, the kind of stuff that you'd be embarrassed to play for people, and yet when it plays, you're like, holy shit. That B-girl is coming back out again on No Free.
No, it's I'm probably at Meteora, Linkin Park Meteora. That's
a good one.
I can listen to that whole album straight through, no issues. Yep. Yeah.
Although I will say,
they realized that their first couple albums weren't new metal enough, so they did a remix album of their first couple albums.
Yeah, wonderful.
Now, embarrassingly, I was more of a ska guy.
Now,
did you have a tiny fedora?
No, I did not.
If you want a truly entertaining new metal album, it's not good, but it's fascinatingly entertaining. You've got to go with Human Clay by Creed.
Oh, man. I worked with some guy who kept trying to get me into Creed because he was into Creed. I didn't know those people existed.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
So I used to work at a rock station, and you know who puts on a damn good show? You know, I'm probably going to get some flack for it, but I'm not a Nickelback fan, but I will say they put on a good concert. They're selling those records, and I get it.
You know what? I don't doubt you. It might not be my thing, but yeah. I believe there's a reason. It's the same thing with Dave Matthews. I hate Dave Matthews fans, but I love their stuff because they clearly care about... When you have a saxophone guy on staff, you win. I'm sorry. Like, come on.
That's why Bruce...
Music can be fun.
That's why Bruce Springsteen is still a big deal.
Well, that's the boss, baby.
God help us all. All right. So let's kill this movie. What's left?
All right, there's a fight. There's a fight in a church between Daredevil and Bullseye, where Daredevil gets stabbed, and then Bullseye kills Elektra.
Kill Elektra first.
Yeah, we didn't even. She's still walking around, dude.
Oh yeah. So
she gets a costume. I mean, why does Bullseye get a costume? He wants a costume. Daredevil has a costume.
Okay. So here's where we are. They fight Bullseye, and then there's the rooftop fight. On the roof of the church, and Daredevil throws him off onto a car.
That's right.
First and foremost, there's a police sniper that's trying to get them, and then Daredevil pulls they're fighting on an organ, and Bullseye's trying to like distract Daredevil with the noises, and then at the end, he hears the bullet, and then he pulls Bullseye's hands into the path of the bullet, and he ends up with stigmata.
Fuck this so hard. I'm sorry, but it's the worst thing in this movie.
Yep.
Why do we need stigmata in this movie?
Because it's already the most Catholic guilt movie I've seen this year.
Because as a former Catholic, I'm in.
As a Catholic, school.
It does for me.
Christ is less subtle than this.
We already had blood dripping down the entirety of the church stemming from a cross. We don't need stigmata. Like, we don't need it. You know, we're just putting a hat on a hat here.
Well, I mean, how else are we supposed to know that Matt Murdock is a practicing Catholic if there's not constant Catholic imagery in the movie?
There is more hand trauma in this than in a George Lucas movie, too. Because her sigh goes through her hand.
Straight through the hand.
Bullseye whips it around and hits it right. Oh, God, this is so much.
There is so much. This movie is incredible.
It brought out my Mark Hamill laugh. Like, that's what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. So they have the fight. He doesn't kill him. And then he finds out that Kingpin is the one who hired him. So then he goes to Kingpin's house.
It's his office. Yeah.
pretty cool set piece, actually. And of course, he's incredibly strong. Which kind of Kingpin's thing is not like super strength, but just like strong guy, you know?
And what's crazy is Ben Affleck's also a big dude, and Michael Clark Duncan is like a head taller and like twice as wide. So, but man, beast!
He is in some places standing on like a box to like give that impression. Sure, so. Sure. Yeah, so it's not that, like, in real life, it's, like, Ben Affleck, and then, like, you know, 7.5 feet tall, we've got Michael Clark Duncan, you know, but I'd be there for it if it was. Like,
I mean, yeah. It's like Laura Dern in Last Jedi, right? Just, like, looming over Oscar Isaac. Okay, so then the fight happens, and then Daredevil breaks his legs. He doesn't kill him, importantly. Does not kill him.
No.
But then Kingpin finds out his secret identity and swears revenge on him, but then he can't tell him because he's blind. Wait, why doesn't he tell them? Why can't he tell people?
They have this great little conversation where, like, honestly, if you just cut out that conversation, it kind of sounds like children doing the, like, well, I know you are, but you know, this whole thing. And he's like, I'm going to tell everybody. That's okay. Tell them you got beat by a blind guy. They won't even care. I'm going to get out and I'm going to come back for you. Yeah, I know you will. But, you know, I'll be there waiting for you. It's like, it's just this whole thing of like, maybe come up with better lines. Like, this dude has great finishing lines. We get two of them within, you know, 10 minutes. You know, we get the bullseye and then the justice is served lines. But his middling conversation needs work. Like, it just, you know, like, just punch him in the face and walk out. You know, justice is served.
Okay, so he doesn't do it because he's blind and he would be embarrassed by being beaten up by a superhero?
Well, that's basically the gist, is, like, everybody in Rikers will beat the shit out of you if they find out.
There's a lot. They're... Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so then they... And then that's it. Yeah, he goes back to work. Oh, and he finds out Electra's still alive.
We also get, I don't know if you guys stayed through the credits, but we
Bullseye. There's a Bullseye scene in the hospital.
Bullseye's alive, and he kills a fly with a syringe.
Hell yeah.
It's kind of badass, I won't lie.
Great in this movie, man. He makes it work.
I still disagree overall, but I will say there's certainly some scenes where it's like, all right, I can deal with this. You know?
Yeah.
It's something.
Yeah.
So let's do final judgments. Little guest, you can go first, man.
Oh, all right. I guess I'm going to do two since I watched this movie twice, and one was theatrical, one was...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually the other car.
Yeah, so theatrical, very much a, it's not bad, it's not good. It's very much like just whatever. If you are super interested in this Daredevil character, sure, go ahead and watch it. I don't think anyone needs to watch it. I don't know, man. There's just so much going on, so I have so many notes here that are just like, what the hell is happening in this scene? What are we doing here? And it's just a lot of that. And it's because moving forward, you have this director's cut that is not like that at all. Like, I think the director's cut actually works as a movie. It's a decent movie. You know, it's not the best superhero film, but when you add in those aspects of learning about who Matt Murdock is compared with just Daredevil, it creates an actual character. You get actual character development a bit from it. Ben Affleck does much better in scenes as Matt Murdock than he does as Daredevil to me. So that's kind of working for me a bit.
Sure. Evan?
So I used to be a pretty, I don't want to say passionate defender of this movie, but anytime this movie would come up, I would be like, I don't think it's as bad as people say it is. And then I rewatched it for this, which I had not done in a while. And now I don't think I'm as staunch a defender. I don't think it's bad, right? Or bad. I don't think it's bad. Mm-hmm. I think it's fine. I think it's more interesting than anything because it is so pre-Iron Man superhero movie before we, like I was saying earlier, nailed down that formula of what that looks like. Because all superhero movies are kind of the same now, right? Like, all the characters, all the main characters, especially in the MCU, they're like kind of quippy, right? They're all sort of the same. Like Doctor Strange is kind of a bit more of an asshole, and Ant-Man is a bit more likable than the average one, but they're all pretty similar.
Yeah.
This, we don't have any of that knowledge. We're just trying to figure out what a cool superhero movie looks like. So I would say do a marathon of Spider-Man 1, X-Men 1, and this, and just kind of get a snapshot of what superhero movies used to look like. So overall, positive, but not really game-changing for this one.
Perfect.
Yeah, Daniel? Not awesome, but, you know.
Daniel?
I kind of want to see the director's cut now. That actually sounds kind of interesting, but I don't know. There's really no reason to watch this except as a curiosity. Go check out the Netflix TV show instead. And really, that's it. Maybe if you were a big Colin Farrell fan, you'll get some enjoyment out of this. But I know you guys probably are few and far between these days. So I don't know. I'm sure it's on basic cable somewhere right now. Have fun.
So what I'm going to say is, I don't think it's a great film. I'm with you guys. But I will recommend people see it because I've never seen anything like this.
That's right. I think that's it. That's totally it.
Like the courtroom scene, they put a green filter like you're in the Matrix. Like, yes. Right? Like Joey Pants is there for no reason, like eating the steak like a jackass. And you're just like, okay, I'm exactly here. Because
they got it wrong, but not in a way that makes sense or that we know about now, that we think about now. You know, it's not right. No, it's not even
a perfect Sunday afternoon movie because it goes nowhere for 3 hours. And once they get to that black and white ball, the last 45 minutes of it are freaking insane. Like, it's nothing but violence and craziness and hand trauma and blood for no reason. It is truly remarkably something. Okay, so Dan, why don't you give us the sales pitch for your podcast one more time? And yeah, and then we'll see you when we do Hulk this summer. I'll go ahead.
Yeah,
and
excellent. I'm excited.
I want to talk about Hulk.
Oh yeah. Anyways, you can check us out. We're on Apple. otherwise, I tweet links on Twitter at ScuttlebuttPC. But we are the Scuttlebutt Podcast. We're a podcast dedicated to the Topps Marvel Collect app, which is digital Marvel trading cards. So if you're looking for something to occupy your time while we're in this never-ending lockdown, that's, you know, something on your phone that you can do while you're watching terrible superhero movies. So check us out. You can find the podcast, like I said, at ScuttlebuttPC on Twitter. You can find me at Qui-Gon Gin and Tonic on Twitter. I'm also in the app as Qui-Gon Gin and Tonic. So find me there if you do end up joining, and let me know if you enjoyed this podcast or our podcast or whatever. Hit me up for trades in there too. So.
Well, thank you guys for joining us. Obviously, rate, review, listen, join Dan's podcast as well. And if you're not a member of the Patreon, you should be. This month, we're finishing up Harry Potter with Deathly Hallows Part 2. Thanks to Kelly for that. And Myron of the Atlanta podcast, who was there as well. And thanks to our guests. Thanks for our panelists. Rate, review, follow on Facebook, Twitter, Letterboxd, where we put up our reviews. And thanks, guys.
Bye.
Myopia Movies is a production of Blue Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find his music on comtech.com. It is registered under the Creative 4 license. Our regular panelists are Matthew Quinn, Daniel Settis, Nick Hoffman, and Jeremy Reichel. Thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thanks, guys.